And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Last week, there was a major battle between Congress and the administration, and the mainstream media hardly noticed it. Oh, they were focused on the close election between Senators Clinton and Obama, and whether or not baseball players were using steroids. But they missed, or mostly missed, a major occurrence.
I cannot overestimate the importance of this battle last week, and it had to do with whether the President of the United States has to comply with the Constitution of the United States. It is well known now that George Bush is wiretapping all of us. Well, he sent the government to, not that he's personally listening in, to the hundreds of millions, indeed billions and trillions of phone calls and emails we send each other every day. The president did it knowing it was against the law. And now he's asking Congress to allow him retroactively to make legal all of his illegal behavior. Now, it's a very complex series of laws here, and you find already the Republicans and the president misstating what's going on. They're saying that Congress is allowing us to be open to terrorists and all kinds of things. In this hour, I will explore from the very beginning the history of warrantless wiretapping in America and why it is so important. And listen, folks, this is not just rhetoric, okay? On your mainstream media, you might see 2 minutes. We're going to explore in 1 hour the history of warrantless wiretapping. And if you disagree with me, I will give you a chance to call in. The number's on your screen, 571-749-1166, 888-488-MARK. Listen to what I have to say. And then if you disagree, bring it on. But I think you will find that what's going to happen in the next few weeks is even more important than what has happened. 3 weeks from today, we will know whether or not Congress is saying to the President of the United States, you're above the law. You can create an East German police state right here in the United States. And don't think Congress won't do it. Our senator here in Virginia, Jim Webb, has already taken steps toward helping George Bush create that police state. Now, Senator Webb and all the Democrats say they don't want to do this, virtually all the Democrats, but they kind of have to because George Bush has threatened that they're going to have a terrorist attack if we don't. I disagree with Senator Webb, and there's still a chance for all of us to change his mind. There's a long story here, and I'm going to give you the story from the very beginning. Before then, you should probably know who I am and why I have authority to talk about this. My name is Mark Levine. I am a constitutional lawyer myself. And I want to start this discussion before the FISA bill, the fight of last week, before the Protect America Act of 6 months ago, before George Bush broke the law, before Richard Nixon broke this law, before even the Constitution began. I want to begin in merry old England because it's important for you to understand how the law works. And the way the law works in America comes from Anglo-American jurisprudence. So listen up, go ahead, fix yourself a drink. We're going to talk the Constitution today. And by the end, I think you'll understand why this is such an important matter. Why it is that in the next few weeks we will know whether Congress not just permits George Bush to be above the law, but would allow every future president of the United States to disobey the Constitution forever. Let's go to merry old England. In England, if the king did something that you didn't like, well, you couldn't sue the king. The king was the sovereign. He was the king. He was the source of all laws, and he had something called sovereign immunity. This is a concept that's still used in American law, even though we don't have a king. Go figure. But let's say that the sheriff were to come into your home in good old England 400 years ago and take your husband off to jail. Or go in and take a look at all the papers on your desk. And you don't want the sheriff to do this. Well, there are reasons why the sheriff could do this. If you're thought to have committed a crime, he could take you off to jail just as authorities could in the United States today. If you're thought to have evidence about your crime in your house, they could look at your papers. But in order to find out whether or not the sheriff was doing the right thing, you would file suit. And you couldn't sue the king, because the king is a sovereign, the king is immune. So what you do is you sue the sheriff. And you say, Mr. Sheriff, you have trespassed in my house. You have taken my husband off to jail. You have looked through all of my papers. That's against the law. Now, the sheriff would have a defense. The sheriff would say, hey, I'm allowed in your house because the king issued me a warrant. And then you'd have a fight over whether or not the warrant was fair or not, whether or not you had committed a crime. If you committed a crime, sheriff has a right to enter your home. If you haven't committed a crime, then the sheriff has no right. You sue the sheriff. He pays damages. And in that sense, you challenge the king. Why have I told you this ancient history? Because George Bush wants to do the exact same thing today. He says that we need to give telecommunications companies amnesty for all the illegal acts that George Bush ordered them to do in the first 7 years of his presidency. How do we know they're illegal? How do we know that George Bush broke the law? Simple. If he didn't break the law, he doesn't need amnesty, right? George Bush is asking to legalize illegal acts he did. Again, if they're legal, then George Bush doesn't need the amnesty at all. And George Bush was so willing to get that amnesty that he himself did something that he said would make terrorists more likely to attack America, but says, I am willing to let the terrorists attack America unless you give me retroactive approval of all the times I violated the Constitution without me having to tell you what I did. I'm going to go through the details of it. You may not believe me now, but you will when this hour is through. So George Bush says, I can't be sued. He's like the king, right? He has sovereign immunity. And since George Bush can't be sued, then we've got to be able to sue the telecommunications companies, his sheriff, the people he orders to spy on American citizens. And because of that, then that's how we get to Bush. See, if we try to sue Bush directly, he's got all kinds of things, sovereign immunity, state secrets acts, all kinds of court doctrines. The only way to find out exactly what he's done is to sue the telecommunications companies themselves. And then by doing that, just like suing the sheriff in Merry Old England, we can find out exactly who Bush is spying on and why. Through this hour, I'm going to take you through the history in America before this president, up until the present day, of all the ways in which the president of the United States has been surveilling us, watching us, seeing what we're doing. Now, I, of course, have no problem if we have criminals, right? There's no problem with watching what a criminal is doing. And I want to move 200 years forward from England to the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution. Those of you that watch my show know that I always keep a Constitution on hand because I strongly believe in this document. This is what protects us in America. The Fourth Amendment, part of the Bill of Rights, has been in our Constitution since 1791, and it says, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. So you understand what the Fourth Amendment is saying. If you want to spy on Americans, you can, but you need a warrant, and the warrant has to be supported by probable cause. There must be some reason to spy on you, some suggestion that you've committed a crime, and then a warrant is issued, and then spy away. This is the Fourth Amendment. This is the law. This is part of the Constitution that every president and every member of Congress is sworn to uphold. If you don't like what the Fourth Amendment says, then the president and the members of Congress need to change it. We need an amendment. But this is the law. And the question is, should the president be allowed to disobey this law with impunity? Fourth Amendment's been around for a long time, and presidents have been going around it for a long time. Famously, Martin Luther King was spied on by the FBI chief, J. Edgar Hoover, who wanted to stop his civil rights activity and tried to find out if King was a communist. King wasn't a communist, and all that Hoover could find out were embarrassing personal details, which he then used against the great civil rights leader. Fast forward to Nixon. What did Richard Nixon do that caused him to be removed from office? Now, we all know Congress was ready to remove him from office and he resigned at the last minute. But what is it that Richard Nixon did? Well, Richard Nixon allowed, we don't know quite yet whether he ordered it or not, but people from the government broke into the Democratic National Committee headquarters at the Watergate Hotel and discovered the Democrats' political plans, right? And we know that Nixon covered it up. Whether he ordered it or not, well, that's, I guess, perhaps in an 18-and-a-half-minute gap of history. But that's the thing that got Nixon in trouble. And in 1972, the Supreme Court came down and made a decision. And in that decision made clear that the President of the United States cannot spy on Americans unless the President has a warrant. Richard Nixon heard that decision in the Supreme Court and ignored it. He set up a dramatic spying network. They would even go in and check your mail, open your mail in violation of federal law, seal it back, and not even tell the post office about it. He sent the FBI and the CIA to spy on a large number of Americans, and a lot of this didn't come out until after Richard Nixon resigned from office. It did come out, though, before a committee run by Senator Frank Church, Democrat of Idaho, and the Church Committee examined all of the past lawbreaking by Richard Nixon and made a determination that this wasn't going to happen again in America. When we come back, I'll tell you what the Church Committee did and how that led to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the very law that George Bush has been violating for the last 7 years. And I will give specific examples of exactly how he violated the law so that you can understand how we came to this point. We'll be right back after this.
Okay, how far would you go to help someone? Would you go to the end of your driveway?
I don't really want to take phone calls.
Would you cross a street? Would you cross an ocean? To a place 6,000 miles from home? And how long would you go? Would you go for a week? A month? A year? Would you go for 2 years? Would you go if you could use your knowledge to teach someone, and in the process, maybe learn something yourself? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps.
Jay, don't forget your helmet.
Will do.
Not your helmet.
Your bike helmet.
Oh, okay. Hi. I'm James Thrash with the Washington Redskins. On the football field, a helmet is an important piece of equipment. I also wear another helmet that's just as important. A bike helmet. It's the most important piece of equipment you'll have the next time you're out on your bike. Wear yours and make sure your kids do too. Safety first with the Skins.
Monica and her friends want you to know that you should never get near a dog when it is eating, playing with a favorite toy, or sleeping. It's really important to make time for exercise and games and keep your dog's vaccines up to date. Never leave a dog in a small, confined space. This can make dogs aggressive like Monica. If you follow this advice, you and your dog can play safely and happily together.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're talking about the history here of warrantless wiretapping in America and about the Church Commission. Now, this was a commission that discovered all the violations that Richard Nixon had done and determined that it wasn't going to happen again. Its response led to the creation of an act called the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA for short. Now, you will hear a lot of discussion about FISA. You may have heard it in the news. You may have no idea what that is. That's the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and it came about as law in 1978 under Jimmy Carter as a way to respond to the Church Committee to stop the violations of law that Richard Nixon had done. This is a court, by the way, that FISA sets up that's a secret court, all right? We Americans don't know about it. The idea was you have to balance national security concerns and civil liberties concern. Ronald Reagan respected the court, the FISA court, and Bill Clinton respected the court. we now enter the Bush presidency and understand that we have this Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act in there. It allows people to spy on terrorists. You just need a warrant to do it. And in fact, if you see a terrorist, you can go and spy him right away. You just have to get retroactive approval from that court. And you can do it secretly. You can do it in the middle of the night. It's a process that works. Already in February 2001, this is very important, this is before September 11th, days after George Bush takes the White House, he asks communications companies across America to participate in widespread data mining, in monitoring the phone calls of every American in the United States. As early as February 2001, prior to September 11th, Quest refuses to cooperate. It's the only telecommunications company, by the way, that does refuse to cooperate. And that's important because it's prior to September 11th. September 11th then happens. We all know that despite monitoring everyone, it didn't seem to work. And we have the vote to go into Afghanistan. At the last minute, again, according to the timeline, Tom Daschle is asked at the very last minute to give the right of the president, and it says it right here, broad authority to exercise expansive powers overseas and in the United States against American citizens. Tom Daschle didn't think it was justified to spy on all American citizens. He refused to add it to the authorization to use military force against Afghanistan. The president, however, does want FISA fixed. He doesn't think FISA is good enough. He works with Congress in the heady days after September 11th. I was working in Congress at that time. I was working, in fact, on the House Judiciary Committee at that time. And at that time, we together, Democrats and Republicans, found a bipartisan bill, a bill to fix, if you will, FISA, to make it appropriate for the current day. And I'm going to play for you what George Bush said when he signed that bill, when he talked about making FISA better after September 11th.
We're dealing with terrorists who operate by highly sophisticated methods and technologies, some of which were not even available when our existing laws were written. The bill before me takes account of the new realities and dangers posed by modern terrorists. It will help law enforcement to identify, to dismantle, to disrupt, and to punish terrorists before they strike. For example, this legislation gives law enforcement officials better tools to put an end to financial counterfeiting, smuggling, and money laundering. Secondly, it provides, gives intelligence operations and criminal investigations the chance to operate not on separate tracks, but to share vital information so necessary to disrupt a terrorist attack before it occurs. As of today, we're changing the laws governing information sharing. And as importantly, we're changing the culture of our various agencies that fight terrorism. Countering and investigating terrorist activity is the number one priority for both law enforcement and intelligence agencies. Surveillance of communications is another essential tool to pursue and stop terrorists. Existing law was written in the era of rotary telephones. This new law that I signed today will allow surveillance of all communications used by terrorists, including emails, the internet, and cell phones.
Okay, so here's what he says. The existing law, that's FISA he's talking about, and this is a month after September 11th. FISA, he says, was written in the era of rotary telephones. The new law, the amendment of FISA, allows surveillance of all communications used by terrorists, he says, including email, the internet, and cell phones. Now, just a week ago, I contacted Senator Webb's office trying to figure out what it is that the president wanted in addition to holding all of his past illegalities to suddenly become legal. And they said, well, this new law would allow us to go after emails, internet, and cell phones. Well, the senator's office was not too well informed because FISA, as amended after September 11th, already allows the government to go after email, the internet, and telephones. So, let's go back to the warrantless wiretapping timeline here. Because in early 2002, something astonishing happens. In early 2002, we have the president make an agreement. And he makes an agreement with the judges on the secret surveillance court that I'm talking about, and sets up with that court warrantless wiretapping. Now, the FISA court knows the law. And the FISA court says, in fact, hey, you got to follow the law. You need to get warrants. And the president said, don't worry. We're going to tag the stuff we get illegally. We're going to tag it and say, hey, we got this illegally. You can't use it. So the FISA court agrees to do that. And in fact, not only that, but the FISA court agrees not to tell the other members of the court. There's only one woman on the court that knows about this. And this happens in May 2002, again back to the timeline. We have the Chief Justice of the United States, William Rehnquist, right-wing conservative, appoints Colleen Kolar Kotelly as the presiding judge of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. Now, Ms. Kolar Kotelly is told that, okay, she's going to accept the earlier agreement. We're going to tag the illegal stuff and go forward with the legal stuff. But here's the interesting thing. She agrees not to tell the other 10 judges of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. This was so secret that the only people who knew outside the administration was the presiding judge. George Bush didn't trust the other 10 members of the secret court, a secret court that had dealt with problems, that had dealt with warrants for the past 30 years, dealing with terrorists and so forth. He wouldn't allow anyone else to know. And she agreed that that was okay. Fast forward, in November 2002, it comes out that George Bush is sponsoring total information awareness. That way, he's going to check all of our emails, all of our phone calls. He's going to spy on all of us. And in September 2003, you have Congress saying that the total information program is illegal and denies the use of funds for any of the total information program. Not to be outdone, George Bush ignores Congress and continues. James Baker, you may remember him. He was the guy that represented George Bush in the Bush v. Gore decision, the very Supreme Court decision that made George Bush president of the United States, even though the majority of Americans and Floridians wanted Al Gore. But James Baker finds out that the administration has lied to the presiding judge. Here, there's only one person in all of America outside the administration that knows that they're spying on all of us, Colleen Kolar Kotelly, a woman who was appointed as presiding judge by the conservative Supreme Court Chief Justice William Rehnquist. And it turns out they're even lying to her. They are not tagging the information. So they're not separating what they gathered legally and illegally. The judge is upset. She reacts. She says to justice officials, either you tell me the truth, or I'm going to charge you with perjury for lying to this court. At that point, the entire operation is suspended. John Ashcroft is informed. John Ashcroft is informed by this judge, and he, although he supported most of it, decides to suspend the program. So he suspends it, and then he has emergency hospitalization. Now, we on this program have detailed what happened, how he's in the hospital, how James Comey, the Deputy Attorney General, is number two. He's in charge. And how Gonzalez tries to get him to sign from his sickness. Now we know what it was all about. He was trying to reauthorize the very program that the presiding judge of the secret court said was illegal. John Ashcroft refused to do it. Does the administration keep doing it? You bet they do. Until December 2005, the famous article in the New York Times, an article entitled, Bush Secretly Lifted Limits on Spying in U.S. After 9/11. George Bush meets with the publisher of the New York Times, Arthur Sulzberger, and begs him not to let the American people know of his extensive lawbreaking. The New York Times, having held the story for a year, refuses, and they publish it, at which point Bush still doesn't stop the illegal activity, but does try to punish, find and punish the people who leaked it to the New York Times. Next month, January 06, people start suing. Remember? Well, I talked about suing the sheriff. Now that's why I brought it up. They're suing the telecommunications companies, saying, you have no right to spy on us. It's a violation of the United States Constitution. It's a violation of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And what do we find out? We find out that they're spying on everyone. In fact, the U.S. District Judge allows, this is very important, allows, under the Patriot Act, allows the administration to spy on all of us without evidence of any criminal behavior. Got it? You don't have to have done anything wrong. The president can still spy on you. And think about what that means. Maybe you go to a pornography site on the internet. Maybe you are giving money to a Democratic presidential candidate. The president wants to know all of these details. The Senate Judiciary Committee begins hearings on surveillance. And then another press article. We have the USA Today article, where they're saying that five former judges from this same secret court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, are saying what the president's doing is illegal. So, finally, in January 2007, the president says, okay, all right, you caught me, I've been breaking the law for the last 7 years. Even though I told the secret court I wouldn't break the law, I've been breaking the law, and they're mad, and they're angry, and they're saying to the president, we're not going to allow you to use any of this information to prosecute terrorists that you gained illegally. So what does he do? He says in January 07, okay, you caught me. I will now follow the law. Why does he do it? Well, the court orders him to, right? Here we have January 07. The court orders him that if he breaks the law, he can't use the material. So he says, okay, all right, you caught me. I will follow the law. From January 07 to August 07, this is just last year, folks, the president says he was within the law. Now, he said he's within the law before, and he's violated the law before. I don't know why we believe him now when we didn't believe him then. But under that time, we're still under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. This 1978 law, amended, updated after September 11th, is still controlling. We can still go after terrorists, folks, but we have to do it within the law. We have to get a warrant. Well, George Bush gets upset. He's upset that he's not allowed to do things the old way. And so in August 2007, he puts forward to the new Democratic Congress something called the Protect America Act. And I don't know of a more Orwellian name than Protect America Act. But the Protect America Act abolishes all the protections. It abolishes all of them. It allows him wide authority to do warrants, basically to do the kind of stuff that was illegal before. And he says to Congress, if you don't pass this right away, well, you know, the terrorists can attack and you'll be blamed for it. Congress caves in, but with a caveat. They say, all right, Mr. President, you say this is essential, you say this is an emergency, we'll give you what you want, but we're going to have a six-month time limit. That bill, the Protect America Act, that gives you all these things a president's never had before to spy on innocent Americans, will expire in February 1st, 2008. They pass the bill, and then they get to work. And the House of Representatives, in November 2007, passes the Restore Act. The Restore Act is a bill that carefully balances the requirements to go after terrorists who indeed already are dangerous, and at the same time protects civil liberties. It respects the Constitution. And the Democrats say they prefer the Restore Act. They try to get it through the Senate. The President and his Republican allies in the Senate refuse to allow the Restore Act to come. They refuse to allow a bill that protects American civil liberties to be heard. And the clock ticks, and the time waits. And finally, it's getting to be January 07, and the Protect America Act, the bill that gives the president all this widespread authority, is about to expire, and the Senate hasn't acted. So the Senate and the House together say, oh, we need more time, Mr. President. The House wants to protect civil liberties. The Senate, the Republicans, are filibustering to prevent the protection of civil liberties. We need more time. The president says, no, there is no more time. You had all the time you needed in the world. You do it my way or the highway. And he adds an additional requirement. Not only does he want the Protect America Act, the act that gives him the right to not seek a warrant to spy on Americans with impunity, he wants to make retroactively legal all his violations in the first 7 years of his presidency. He wants to say that the telecommunications companies that he ordered against the law to spy on American citizens will have immunity. Why is that important? Well, it's important because it's the only way to find out what's going on. We can't know what the president did. We don't know who he spied on. There are lawsuits, but you can't sue the president. He has sovereign immunity. Remember merry old England? You have to sue the telecoms. And the telecoms, if they can get immunity, the president never needs to disclose all the illegal acts he did. Now, how do I know that the president committed illegal acts? In addition to all these newspaper articles, I mean, he hasn't told me. Maybe he's done everything precisely by the letter of the law. How do we know? Very simple. George Bush said, "I will veto the extension of the Protect America Act. I will allow," in his words, "this country to be open to attacks by terrorists unless you give me immunity." Why does he want it so badly? If he didn't break the law, immunity means nothing. The suits go, you sue the telecoms. If it's legal, it's just like that old sheriff in England. If it's legal, the suit's dismissed, no problem. The President of the United States is, in his own words, willing to sacrifice American security in order to get retroactive amnesty for his violations of the Constitution of the United States. The question is, would Congress let him do it? Congress tried to extend time. There was this disagreement between the House and the Senate. They tried to extend the time. The president said, "No, I'm going to veto that bill." So the Senate acted. And the Senate, unfortunately, had two Democrats that wanted to help George Bush. The Senate passed a bill out of the Judiciary Committee that's a very good bill. It's similar to the House bill. It protects American civil liberties. And we already know the House did it as well. But another committee of the Senate, led by Jay Rockefeller, Senator of West Virginia, a person who gets a lot of money from telecommunications companies, he did it differently. He agreed with Bush. He wanted to give them immunity. Jay Rockefeller came on record saying that all the things that George Bush did to violate the law should never be known. We should give him immunity and amnesty forever. And the majority leader of the Senate, Harry Reid, was complicit in it all. Oh, Harry Reid will tell you that he believes that there shouldn't be amnesty. But you see, what people don't realize is the majority leader can decide what's the base bill. That's his power. He could have taken the bill from the Senate Judiciary Committee, the ones that protect civil liberties, the one that doesn't give Bush amnesty for all his illegal acts. He didn't. He took Senator Rockefeller's bill and he made it the standard. And he did something even worse, the majority leader, Harry Reid. He said that if you want to change this bill, you need 60 votes, not 51, 60. So what happened? There were various amendments. Amendments to strike this amnesty. And the amendments were defeated. And I'm sad to say that our own Senator, Jim Webb of Virginia, voted not to strike amnesty. I have tried for the last week to find out why Senator Webb voted that way. They have refused to respond. I have invited Senator Webb to come here on this show and explain his vote. No response. Hopefully he will come in the future and he'll be able to answer those questions. To date, he has not. There were other amendments, even worse amendments. There was an amendment by Senator Feinstein that would have said, "All right, Mr. President, you want immunity for all your past acts of violating the law. All right, Mr. President, you want the Protect America Act, which allows you to spy on vast numbers of people, not individual warrants, as the FISA law requires. You want all of that. All right, but let's make a deal. At least only have that. It will be the exclusive means. You can't spy on Americans outside of that. You'll agree to that, won't you, Mr. President?" No. No, he wouldn't. Only 57 senators, including Senator Webb, who voted the right way on this, only 57 senators voted to add exclusivity. It wasn't in the base bill due to the Senator Rockefeller and Senator Harry Reid wanting to protect the president for some reason. I don't know why. Senator Reid won't explain either. So I want you to think about what this means. When the Feinstein Amendment failed, where there's no exclusivity, what does it mean? What's exclusivity? What are these big words? It means that the president does not have to follow the law. Exclusivity means that the president, with all these huge, wide powers in the Senate bill, is not even restricted to those. He can spy on everyone without a warrant, without following the Constitution of the United States, because The bill would say it's not exclusive. You can do whatever you want, Mr. President. We, Congress, bow to you, our dictator. Do as you will. We're going to abolish Article 1, oversight, the Constitution. We're going to go our merry way. That was the Senate bill. And that bill came to the floor just last week. And when that bill came to the floor, 29 Democratic senators opposed it. Senator Obama opposed it. Hillary Clinton didn't vote, but she made clear that she opposed the bill. What matters is the ones that voted for it. Who voted for the bill? Every single Republican, Joe Lieberman, and 18 Democrats, including Senator Webb of Virginia. Now, Senator Webb, in his correspondence, will tell you he prefers the House bill. He prefers civil liberties be protected. He prefers that we follow the Constitution. That's his preference. But when push came to shove, he voted for the bill that he knew would give the president unlimited powers to disobey the law, that would not only retroactively give him amnesty for all the things that he violated before, but would give him future permission to not even be bound by the very bill that Webb was voting for. Does Senator Webb understand that? I don't know. I've tried to talk to his staff. I've tried to talk to lawyers on his staff. There's a whole, I posted on Daily Coast, a whole correspondence between his office and me. Still no response. And I got nervous. I got nervous because Democrats have been caving to this president one time after the other, and I was afraid that the House Democrats would cave, and then, well, the Senate would cave as well. The House asked for 21 more days to look at the bill, and Bush said no. Well, I won't give you 21 more days. I want the thing to expire because I know if I put pressure on you to let it expire, you'll cave. You'll give me everything I want. You will make me America's dictator. Well, the House did something extraordinary Friday, just a few days ago. They said no, Mr. President. They said no, Mr. President. You don't have an absolute right. No, Mr. President, you cannot do this over our objection. And he said, but the terrorists will attack. If the Protect America Act expires, the terrorists will attack, and it'll be all your fault. But this time, the Democrats didn't fall for it. And when we come back, I'm going to show you interviews with this House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and with the President of the United States, interviews that now I think you will fully understand exactly where the conflict is now. Because, my friends, the battle isn't over. If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back after this.
How far would you go to help someone? Would you go to the end of your driveway? Would you cross a street? Would you cross an ocean? To a place 6,000 miles from home? And how long would you go? Would you go for a week? A month? A year? Would you go for 2 years? Would you go if you could use your knowledge to teach someone and in the process maybe learn something yourself? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps.
Jay, don't forget your helmet.
Will do.
Not your helmet.
Your bike helmet.
Oh, okay.
Hi. I'm James Thrash with the Washington Redskins. On the football field, a helmet is an important piece of equipment. I also wear another helmet that's just as important, a bike helmet. It's the most important piece of equipment you'll have the next time you're out on your bike. Wear yours and make sure your kids do too. Safety first with the Skins.
Monica and her friends want you to know that you should never get near a dog when it is eating, playing with a favorite toy, or sleeping. It's really important to make time for exercise and games and keep your dog's vaccines up to date. Never leave a dog in a small, confined space. This can make dogs aggressive like Monica. If you follow this advice, you and your dog can play safely and happily together.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. So now I think you can understand exactly what was going on in the fight between the House and the Senate and the President of the United States. Now it should be clear to you exactly what's going on here. The President of the United States wants two things. He wants, well, three things. He wants unlimited authority to spy on virtually everyone. He wants to make sure that his past illegal actions he gets amnesty for. That's something called retroactivity or telecommunications immunity. And he wants no exclusivity. He wants to make sure that he's not bound by this legislation and he can do whatever he wants in the future. Okay? So, retroactivity, all his illegal actions in the past get fixed. And two, exclusivity, that even this expansive legislation, doesn't prohibit him from doing anything in the future. Well, the Democrats said no. And the president said, aha, well, your Protect America Act is going to expire, and you're in real danger here. And here you have Nancy Pelosi say, now, just a minute, Mr. President. We're not in real danger. If we were in real danger, you wouldn't have threatened to veto the extension to begin with. You would not have said that we could let the law expire. Why is it that you are insisting that the expiration be premised on protecting the telecommunications companies? Here's Nancy Pelosi when asked, what happens if this expires? What will be the problem?
The one case you didn't discuss is the new cases that could come under the Protect America Act. How do you think that's a danger? That
no, the new cases would be covered by the underlying FISA Act. I mean, they're covered every way. And that's why you have Richard Clark, again, nonpartisan, Chief National Security Council terrorism advisor in three Republican administrations, one Democratic, and the president's own assistant attorney general saying in an interview that if the August bill were allowed to expire in 10 days, intelligence officials would still be able to continue eavesdropping on already approved targets for another year under the law. Then they have plenty of opportunity under the existing FISA law. So the under the law is the operative phrase. With a court order, the administration can do anything because it's under the law, and they know that. That's why they threatened to veto an extension.
They know that. That's why they threatened to veto an extension. They know that if this law expires, we still have the old FISA Act, the one that's worked for the last 30 years. There may be a little more paperwork, but it will protect America. Here you had George Bush saying, I will veto an extension. I'm not going to give you any more time to work on this. Let this act expire unless you give me dictatorial powers. And the Democrats said, okay, it'll expire, I guess. We don't want it to expire, but hey, if you insist it expire rather than be a dictator, we're okay with it. Does this mean it's all over? Does this mean the Democrats have won? Not in your life. It will expire. It has expired. In fact, it expired today. I don't know that we're going to have an attack soon. But the question is, what will happen next? Well, Nancy Pelosi says that we're going to work on a bill in the next 21 days. The House and the Senate will come together. The House wants to protect civil liberties. The Senate wants to destroy civil liberties. People like Senator Webb agree with the House bill, but they voted for the Senate bill, so his vote would harm us, but what he says would help us. We're going to do this in regular order. It will come back. Now let's watch how Nancy Pelosi responded to what's going to happen in the future.
They speak in terms of wanting a path towards a decision on the bill.
Nancy,
can you give them some clear read as to when you think an agreement could be reached so that if there was an extension, they could have some confidence that it would be the last one?
These are not new issues. Everyone understands retroactive immunity, and everybody understands exclusivity, that the president does not operate outside the law. There are some other issues.
They seem to mostly want a path. They speak in terms of wanting a path towards a decision on the bill.
Message
Can you give them some clear read as to when you think an agreement could be reached so that if there was an extension, they could have some confidence that it would be the last one?
These are not new issues. Everyone understands retroactive immunity, and everybody understands exclusivity, that the president, it does not operate outside the law. There are some other issues that I don't think will be difficult to resolve. But remember this. Last night, was it? The night before last, the Senate finally passed its bill. We passed our bill a long time ago. There are dilatory tactics on the part of the administration so that they couldn't pass their bill until toward the end of this session, so that they had us up against the wall once again. But we can't, you know, this is how we protect the American people, how we collect the intelligence to fight terrorism is a very important responsibility, and we take it deadly seriously. Not an issue that we would deal with. The Senate passed a bill the night before last. We should have passed it yesterday.
If you were to get an extension such as what was defeated yesterday, could you say in confidence that you thought an agreement would be reached?
Well, I'd say it this way. We will continue to track that same 21 days because that's what we think we would need, of course, with the members out largely next week, but the principals can be working on it, and then when we come back to continue whatever floor action we would need in that regard. But we will make sure that everyone knows what the differences are between us on this legislation, and this is not an issue about whether we want to protect the American people. We certainly do. It's about whether the president can act outside the law. He certainly shouldn't. Whether he's a Democrat or he or she is a Republican, they should honor the law, and that's what this discussion is about. I believe we could. Yes, I think so. I mean, that's why we were asking for 21 days.
This is not an issue about whether we want to protect the American people. It's about whether the president can act outside the law. Now, if you've been following this before, hopefully you have a very clear indication of exactly what Nancy Pelosi is talking about. Let's hear what the president has to say on this issue. Let's hear his defense of why he needs to act outside the law, of why he needs retroactive immunity.
Midnight legislation authorizing intelligence professionals to quickly and effectively monitor terrorist communications will expire. If Congress does not act by that time, our ability to find out who the terrorists are talking to, what they are saying, and what they're planning will be compromised. It would be a mistake if the Congress were to allow this to happen. Members of Congress knew all along that this deadline was approaching. They said it themselves. They've had more than 6 months to discuss and deliberate. And now they must act and pass legislation that will ensure our intelligence professionals have the tools they need to keep us safe. Earlier this week, the Senate did act and passed a strong bill, and did so with a bipartisan majority. The Senate bill will ensure that we can effectively monitor those seeking to harm our people. The Senate bill will provide fair and just liability protection for companies that assisted in the efforts to protect America after the attacks of September the 11th. Without this protection, without this liability shield, we may not be able to secure the private sector's cooperation with our intelligence efforts. And that, of course, would put the American people at risk.
I want you to understand what he's saying here. Without the liability shield, we can't get the telecommunication companies to break the law. You see, they don't need immunity if they're following the law. They already have immunity. FISA already gives them immunity if they follow the law. But we need the companies to break the law. That's why we need retroactive immunity. That's why it's so vital to get them to do this. Remember, Quest didn't agree with the president and said, we're not going to follow this. And the U.S. government punished Quest by denying them all kinds of contracts. It sure makes it a lot easier for telecommunications companies if they do what the president asks, break the law and spy on all of us. That's why Mark Klein was found, has testified that he hooked up in San Francisco for AT&T a monitor that monitors millions of Americans' telephone and email. That's why AT&T needs protection. Otherwise, you can sue them and sue them for a violation of privacy. It should also be said that even if you feel sorry for telecommunications companies, there was another amendment in the Senate bill, and that bill was one to allow the government to reimburse the telecommunications companies. They wouldn't be out any money at all. Well, George Bush was against that amendment as well, because this isn't about the telecoms. This is about whether or not the president is beyond the law. Let's hear a little bit more.
Now it's the House's turn to act. It is clear that the Senate bill would pass the House with bipartisan support. Republicans and Democrats in the Senate can put partisanship aside and pass a good bill. There's no reason why the House cannot do the same and pass the Senate bill immediately.
You see what the president is doing here? He says now it is time for the House to act, pretending that the House has not acted, conveniently forgetting that the House acted in a timely fashion in November of last year in passing the Restore Act, an act that carefully balances civil liberties, the Constitution, and the need, yes, the need that we have to spy with warrants on terrorists, on people that are out to harm us. No one doubts that need. And the House carefully weighed it and in a bipartisan bill passed the Restore Act. The president doesn't like that act. It doesn't give retroactive amnesty for all the illegal lawbreaking he and the telecom companies did in the past, and it does require exclusivity. It is the exclusive means by which the president can spy on people. Oh, the president doesn't like that. That means that he is not beyond the law. That means that he must obey the law. Ooh, he doesn't like that at all. He wants the Senate bill. The Senate bill that not only gives retroactive amnesty, but also says that this law doesn't control the president. It's not exclusive. He can do whatever he damn well pleases. So he conveniently forgets that the House has already acted. He conveniently forgets that that was a bipartisan bill too. Sure, it was 218 Democrats and 5 Republicans, but that's bipartisan, you know. If the Senate bill is bipartisan as well, with people like Senator Jim Webb saying he doesn't support it but voting for it anyway, with people like Senator Jim Webb saying he prefers the House bill but voting for the Senate bill, which is the true bipartisan bill? The Democrats in the Senate wanted to vote for the House bill, but were denied the right to do so by their majority leader, Harry Reid, who's supposed to represent the Democrats. Instead of doing what the majority of Democrats wanted, Harry Reid put Senator Rockefeller's bill, Senator Rockefeller of West Virginia, the chairman of the Intelligence Committee, he got his bill on the table, not the bill out of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And Rockefeller, having been paid handsomely by telecommunications companies, he convinced Reid to do the wrong thing, and now Bush wants everyone to follow in their footsteps. But the House did the right thing, and that's the bill that would protect the American people. Let's hear a little more.
Our government has no greater responsibility than getting this work done. And there really is no excuse for letting this critical legislation expire.
Quick note, the president has again forgotten that he wanted the legislation to expire. He threatened to veto any extension of the legislation unless it granted him dictatorial powers. So whose fault is it that is expiring? Let's hear more. Because the next sentence is funny. The president falls into a Freudian slip. He asks that the will of the House be done, when what he really meant was the will of the Senate be done, and then he corrects himself. But it's really funny because he pretends like he wants the will of the American people. Well, the will of the American people was expressed by the House of Representatives. So listen to this Freudian slip.
I urge congressional leaders to let the will of the House and the American people prevail and vote on the Senate bill before adjourning for their recess. Failure to act would harm our ability to monitor new terrorist activities and could reopen dangerous gaps in our intelligence. Failure to act would also make the private sector less willing to help us protect the country, and this is unacceptable. The House should not leave Washington without passing the Senate bill. Now, I am scheduled to leave tomorrow for a long-planned trip to 5 African nations. Moments ago, my staff informed the House leadership that I'm prepared to delay my departure and stay in Washington with them if it will help them complete their work on this critical bill.
Oh, thank you, Master President. You're going to stay home just to help us out? Really? After you threatened to veto an extension of the bill before, now you're going to stay home from Africa just to make sure that you get dictatorial powers? How kind of you, waiting around just a few days to make sure that we make you dictator for life. You're even willing to delay your trip to get that. Thanks, but no thanks. And Bush, as always, concludes by trying to scare the living daylights out of all of us.
The lives of countless Americans depend on our ability to monitor terrorist communications. Our intelligence professionals are working day and night to keep us safe. And they're waiting to see whether Congress will give them the tools they need to succeed or tie their hands by failing to act. American people are watching this debate as well. They expect Congress to meet its responsibilities before they leave town on a recess. I'll answer a few questions, Ben. If you got a question, I'll be prepared to answer.
Thank you, Mr. President. It appears with that deadline approaching that the House and the White House might be seen as being engaged in a game of chicken here, playing politics with an important intelligence law.
Yeah.
If the law expires and something happens, wouldn't you be at least partly to blame? And on your Africa trip, if you have to delay, do you think that you would be shortening your trip at all?
As to the latter, you know, the delay depends on whether the House acts.
It all depends on whether the House acts. Whether the House acts, not the Senate acts. The President likes the Senate bill. In the Senate, he's got people like Senator Jay Rockefeller, West Virginia, working to ensure that he and the telecommunications companies will never be discovered. That the American people will never find out the extent of lawbreaking. We'll never find out how many millions of us were spied on illegally by the President of the United States. Remember, he wouldn't need amnesty if it were legal. And so he wants the House to act. He wants the House to quickly ratify his dictatorship. But there's still time, folks. There's still time for you to call your member of Congress to make sure that the House bill is supported, not the Senate one, to make sure that your civil liberties are protected.
You see what the President is doing. He's saying there's no reason why the House can't pass the Senate bill. But we know that the senators don't want to pass that bill. The Democratic senators, including Senator Webb of Virginia, will tell you it's an awful bill. This is a bill that gives the President dictatorial rights. Just like there's no reason why the House can't pass the Senate bill, there's no reason why the Senate can't pass the House bill. Call your member of Congress. Call your senator. Call Senator Jim Webb and ask him to pass the House Restore Act. He's already on record as supporting it. Make sure he puts his money where his mouth is. This is Mark Levine signing off.